Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 262. Greta, what's new?
Hey. You know, it's getting chillier here in Middle Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
We were in Florida last week, and we got home, and I jumped out of the car and promptly froze.
Right, so on. It
was a bit of a rude awakening, but I think I'm happy that fall's here.
Glad you managed to thaw out in time to record another ep.
Yes, same.
Speaking of episodes, on this one, we'll be taking a close look at the line of Elros, Kings of Numenor, from Unfinished Tales. It's a brief and fascinating account of the 3,000-year history of Numenor, and there's a lot to unpack. So,
Yeah, it was actually a very interesting read.
Yeah.
I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I am too. There's a lot of, you wouldn't think, because it's kind of organized in sort of a list fashion, but there's actually a lot, I think, a lot that emerges from reading this text. So,
yeah.
But before we get into that, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Whoop-sht.
Boom.
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Andrew T., John R., Ms. Anonymous, and our newest executive producer, Red Hawk.
Welcome. Thank you.
Red Hawk, you rock.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for becoming an executive producer. We greatly appreciate it.
Very much.
Also want to give a shout out to another new patron, Alex S. Alex, thank you for your pledge.
Thank you.
Greatly appreciate your support.
Indeed.
You too can support the Tolkien Road by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Becoming a patron lets you support the show in a tangible way and lands you some awesome perks. And don't forget, you can now make an annual pledge and get 1 month free. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. If you are a 5-star fan of the Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes or your preferred source for the show and dropping us a rating and review. And when you do that, it helps get the word out about the Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on. And give a shout out to our most recent 5-star review from where is it here? There we go. Carrie Paz on iTunes on October 5th. So the subject was very good. They do get very Catholic-y sometimes. I'm not sure.
Catholic-y. That's awesome.
Yeah. I like that.
I'll take it. It's a compliment.
It's true. I mean, I own that 100%. So yep. If we become known as the Catholic-y Tolkien podcast, I'm cool with that. So very cool with that. So,
I agree. Although, I might even need to make it onto a t-shirt at some point.
Yeah.
So Tolkien Road, the Catholic-y podcast.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The Catholic-y Tolkien podcast.
Yes, exactly.
Although, I don't know, Caitlin might want to arm wrestle us for that title, so you never know.
Yeah, that's true.
But we'd win.
We might have to throw down.
We'd win. So she says, Carrie says, great podcast on your favorite author. Very interesting topics and a great dynamic between the two. They get very religious sometimes, but it's tolerable. So.
Hey, and she still gave us 5 stars.
Still gave us 5 stars.
That's awesome.
I wonder if she's so Carrie Paz. I should also say we don't 100% know that Carrie is a female, even though we're referring to them in the feminine, right? Because it's Kerry, which I believe can sometimes be the way a man might spell the name Carrie, right?
Like Carrie Collins, the famous Penn State
quarterback. And played for the Titans here.
That's right, he did. In
Tennessee.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, it's possible that we're talking about a guy. So, I don't know, but it's not clear to me. But thank you regardless.
Yes.
And I'm interested by the great podcast on your favorite author. I'm not sure if they're referring to me as the favorite, like being like my favorite author is Tolkien, or if it's like just the general, like your, like the world's favorite author. Anyway,
that's how I took it. It's like more like the world's.
Yeah.
Like the collective your.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Tolkien should be everybody's favorite author.
I agree. I'm glad you're there. Mm-hmm. Glad you've arrived at that acknowledgement.
Well, you get more than one favorite, right?
They're all Greta's favorites.
They're all my favorites.
Yes. All right.
Well, thank you, Carrie. That was awesome.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Carrie. All right. And it's time for the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5 for all of those watching us on YouTube.
Oh.
3, 2, 1.
Whoop-sht.
Awesome.
Yes.
You too can be a part of the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5. Just head on over to YouTube where this episode is posted and give us your best whoopsh in the comments below. That's H-W-H-A-P-I-S-H is the official spelling right now.
So. Okay, so I remember discussing that at some point.
Yeah.
I didn't know that we had settled on a spelling.
But we'll accept alternate spellings. We just love to get the whoopsh no matter what form it comes in.
So. I don't think I like the H at the beginning.
Well,
Is it silent?
It's kind of a... So you know Beowulf, right? Beowulf is like, yeah. Was very influential on Tolkien, right? And he actually wrote his own translation of it. Uh-huh. Well, in Anglo-Saxon, in which it was written, the first word in Beowulf is hwat, right? So it's H-W-A-S-H-T, right? The ash is the A and E, like letter that's where A and E are combined, right, into one letter. So I like that.
Okay, that's fair.
It's fitting for a Tolkien
podcast. You defended it well. I'll accept it for now.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, and just one more thing on YouTube. We're getting close to that 1,000 subscriber mark. Get on over there. Subscribe to the channel, right? Take you about all of 10 seconds. You know you've got a YouTube channel, a YouTube account yourself already. So just head on over there, subscribe to us, and we're going to be doing increasingly. I've got a bunch of videos that aren't available on the podcast feed over there, so you need to watch those too. Did my recent one a couple weeks ago on what Gandalf really looked like according to what Tolkien actually said and the nature of Middle-earth. So head on over there. It's going to surprise you. And while you're there, subscribe.
Tell everyone you know to subscribe, too.
Right on.
That's what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So this week, we are exploring the line of Elros, Kings of Numenor. This is the third chapter in the Second Age section of Unfinished Tales. Of its source among his late father's papers, Christopher called it a fine manuscript. Though Christopher gives no date for the text, given that the Numenorean legend began to take recognizable form during and after the writing of The Lord of the Rings, it seems certain that this text dates from at least the late 1940s and likely much later than that. As we have explored before, the history of Numenor spans a vast period, over 3,000 years. While works like Akalabeth and The Tale of Years also chronicle the events of this period, the line of Elros approaches it by listing the generations of Numenor's monarchs, which totals 25 here. Though the monarcho-historical approach, as we might call it, is one that seems to have been a common practice from the earliest days of human civilization. Before there was a common system of dates and years, we can easily see how it would have been convenient to recall particular periods of history according to the reigns of particular figures. Even now, we might think in these terms, depending on what country we live in.
Mm-hmm.
Numenor is no different, right? So
yeah,
we can think of the history of, like, we live in the U.S., we can think of the history of the U.S. in terms of, like, who was president at the particular time, right?
Yep.
Even though we have a system of years that we can use, it's sometimes easy to think of back, back when Bill Clinton was president, or back when... Ronald Reagan was president, right? Mm-hmm. So you can think of like those periods. Mm-hmm. And we often think of those times as like the Clinton years or the Reagan years or something like that, right?
Do.
If you live in the UK, you might think of, I see frequent reference to, people like, the Thatcher years or the Blair years, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of the prime minister. Mm-hmm. Of course, once upon a time in the UK, it would have been according to who was the king at the time.
Right.
Yep. Of course, Queen Elizabeth's been queen for so long that it's like, that's a really vast period of time.
Yes, and becoming vaster.
Yes. It might never end. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, she might live forever at this point.
She might be Elven, now that I think about it.
Yes. Well, I digress.
Yeah.
I digress.
Sorry. Tangent.
Yeah. Very tangent there. So, interesting tangent, but tangent nonetheless.
Still tangent.
We got a lot to cover in this one, so we need to plow ahead. Hey there, fellow travelers. If you've made it this far on your journey down the Tolkien Road, you take Tolkien and Middle-earth as seriously as we do. That being the case, we want to invite you to join the Tolkien Road community over on Patreon. You've certainly heard us give shoutouts to our patrons before, but that's not the only benefit our patrons receive. Other benefits include patron-only episodes, annual gifts, personalized video greetings from John and Greta, early access to new episodes, free copies of my books Tolkien's Requiem and Tolkien's Overture, and more. Oh yeah, and just in case you find ads like this a bit annoying, Tolkien Road episodes are ad-free on Patreon. That's right. Not only do you get the latest episodes of the Tolkien Road early on Patreon, but you get them commercial-free as well. Most importantly, your monetary support makes it possible for the Tolkien Road to keep on evering on. The truth is, it takes time and money to create this podcast, and every dollar helps us on our quest to make the Tolkien Roads something Tolkien himself would be proud of. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road for more info. Once again, that's patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Now, back to the show. So themes. Throughout this episode, we'll be picking out some key themes of the history of Numenor that emerges from the text. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not necessarily that they're like called out directly as this is a theme, but there are certain things throughout this that you can tell were on Tolkien's mind as he was writing, as he was composing this.
That were influencing him, maybe? Is that what you mean?
Well, just things that emerged, like notes that he made that you can tell, like, okay, these are things that like were important enough for him to list in this, you know, to mention here. Because there's a lot more you can say about the history of Numenor, but these are the key things, you know, that he wanted to mention here.
Okay.
So... it begins with Numenor's inception, which is said to be the Second Age. And this is all these years are going to be in the Second Age. So 32 of the Second Age, right? So 32 years after the defeat of Morgoth, after the War of Wrath, right? Elros, son of Eärendil, and the brother of Elrond, ascends the throne of Armenelos. And he is given the name Tar-Minyatur in Quenya.
Okay.
All of the kings are given names in Quenya. Tar-Minyatur means, literally, king, first lord, right? So that Tar is going to be like the king, or it's really like ruler, right? Because there are some queens that we're going to find, and they also have Tar at the beginning of their name. So that Quenya term Tar means ruler, essentially. If it's a man, it's going to be king. If it's a woman, it's going to be queen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the name Minyatur, that part of it is first lord, okay?
And so all of the kings, that second name... is chosen by them, or is it chosen for them based on kind of their personality or interests?
It's not entirely clear. That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to remember back if there was anything about that in Aldarion and Arrendis when we read that short story, because of course Aldarion does become the king eventually. So I'd have to go back. Let me glance down here real quick.
Well, I just remember, like, Tar Palantir, right? It says that he took that name because he was far-seeing.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a name that someone else has given. Mm-hmm. It gives them, right? It's not clear to me.
Yeah.
So
just curious.
Yeah, they might accept a certain name, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and be like, okay, I'll take that name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not clear.
Gotcha.
All right. So, King First Lord. So two themes to note immediately here. The first is the custom of giving monarchical names in Quenya, right? So even though they're not elves, right? The people of Numenor are not elves. Elros deliberately chooses to not be an elf, right? He chooses to be a man. This seems to be a way of, even though he's half-elven, right?
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be a way of doing homage to the close association of Numenor with Aman, the Blessed Realm,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's, from the very beginning, we remember that from reading a Akalabeth, there's this very close friendship between the people of Aman and the people of Numenor. Even though the Numenoreans are not allowed to venture to Aman, the people of Aman will come to visit Numenor and bring gifts and, you know, and increase their knowledge and do these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So Quenya is an important part of their culture. It's how they name their kings from the very beginning. Second, the exceptional lifespan of the kings of Numenor, even above that of other Numenoreans. Elros lives for 500 years, reigning for 410 years without weariness until the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically, the kings, even above the other Numenoreans, seem to have a long lifespan. So we can think of like an average Numenorean as like three times, you know, the length of a normal person. So you might let's just throw a number, 80 years out there, even though I think Tolkien had a specific number in mind himself. We'll just use 80 years. 80 years, if that's normal lifespan of a man, right, of a human, then the average lifespan of a Numenorean might be somewhere like 240, 250 years, right?
Mm.
But then Elros is even longer, right? Elros lives 500 years, and it would seem that the line of Elros is even longer, and that's owing to their, to their being descendants of Eärendil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Direct descendants of Eärendil.
And Elros is, Elrond's brother. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, remember Elrond, they're both half-elven. Elrond chooses to become an elf.
Right.
Elros chooses to become a man.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, Elros Tar-Minyatur reigns until Second Age 442. And I want to also, one other thing about the, so I'm not going to get too far into this, but there are some notes to the text in which Christopher discusses certain discrepancies that arise between other texts and this one, as well as there's a question of like, okay, what I just said about the, you know, people, the line of Elros living even longer than the normal Numenoreans, like, is that actually true? Because in some places it seems like it might not be entirely clear. So it's one of these things where Tolkien seems to have not made up his mind. We've got to remember, this is an unfinished tales. This is not the final word on all of this, because Tolkien himself never had to sit down and write the final draft of this, right? He never had to send it to the publishers himself. And so Christopher is presenting this as something that's not quite finished. And so there's going to be discrepancies between what's here and what's written elsewhere. Elros Tar-Minyatur reigns until 442 of the Second Age. His son, Vardimir Noliman, Vardimir means the jewel of Varda, is it's not clear whether he's technically the second king or not, right? Things get off to a weird start with the Elros dynasty with Vardimir, because he never actually takes up the scepter, but hands it on to his son, who becomes Tar-Amandil. There's another note here that says he is held by custom to have reigned for 1 year, and so here is accounted the second king of Numenor. But you'll notice there's in the text there's no Tar-Vardimir here, right? Mm-hmm. But with that, we have another theme that emerges. From henceforth, it becomes the custom of the kings of Numenor to yield the scepter voluntarily before their death, right? So with Vardimir Noliman, right? He immediately gives the scepter to his son, even though in the like the Scroll of Kings he might have been listed as having 1 year just to keep that unbroken, you know, succession going. But the point is that Tolkien makes a point to say that the yielding of the scepter becomes a tradition, right? So you don't like we think of most in most kings or queens we think of, they're going to go all the way to their death, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to be king or queen all the way to their death, the ruler all the way to their death. In the case of the kings of Numenor, the rulers of Numenor, it was not so, right? They deliberately reached a point of weariness, or they reached a point where they discerned it's time for me to be done and hand the scepter on to my descendant, right? To the next one in line. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's a very interesting theme, and we need to keep that in mind as we move forward, because that becomes a point of conflict and a point of change later on. So Tar-Amandil is the third ruler. He would be the grandson of Elros. Mm-hmm. His name means friend of Aman. So he reigns from 442 until 590 of the Second Age, and in 590 he surrendered the scepter. So again, he lived beyond 590, but he surrendered the scepter in 590 to his son. Mm-hmm. All right. Now you're looking something up. Is there something you wanted to say, or you like a curiosity?
Oh, no, I was just looking over the little section about excuse me, Vardimir. Because I had somehow missed that he actually never technically reigned. So that was curious to me. I was kind of wondering if there was any explanation given, but it doesn't say that.
I would say maybe he technically reigned, but not he didn't actually reign, right? So
it's not confusing.
Well, technically, in the sense that like his name is listed in the scrolls, mm-hmm. right? Depending on which source you reference, mm-hmm. and is kind of officially listed as, or maybe officially reigned for 1 year, and then, but in actuality, he never reigned because he just handed it over to Tar-Amandil.
Yeah, I just found that curious, and I was wondering if there was a reason given, but it doesn't appear that there was.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can speculate, and I think it becomes clearer later on when they stop doing this. You know, that it was that it's a point of that. Here's my take on it. Right. Numenor is not about this like great bastion of power. Right. It's about ruling for peace. It's about bringing the peace of Aman, the blessedness of Aman to men. Right. Mm-hmm. And even though they can't partake of it fully and they're not meant to partake of it fully, it's meant to bring those things to men. And as we talked about in other episodes, when we discussed the religion of Numenor, there seems to be that clear missionary purpose, right? The kings meet, go every year, three times a year to the Pillar of Heaven, the Menil Tarma, and they offer praise to Iluvatar, right? And they're supposed to carry that to the nations who are under the shadow, mm-hmm. right? They're under the shadow of death, right? And of mm-hmm. other things as well, right? Mm-hmm. And of domination by tyrannical powers, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that laying down of the scepter voluntarily is a sign that, like, I'm not in this for the power, I'm in this for this, for being a servant, right? Mm-hmm. For serving my people, right? And I lay down my scepter voluntarily is a sign that I'm not here to hang on to power, right? I'm not here to, you know, just to be the one that's in charge and make it all about me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Good. Thanks. Right on.
Mm-hmm.
Hey there, fellow Tolkienites. Since you happen to be listening to this podcast, I thought you'd be excited to hear that my books Tolkien's Requiem and Tolkien's Overture are now available on Audible. Tolkien's Requiem is an exploration of the First Age story of Beren and Lúthien, as found in The Silmarillion. In Tolkien's Requiem, I explore how the story is rooted in Tolkien's own life, and the important role it plays in the Middle-earth legendarium. One reader called it a gift to the world, and another said, I wish I'd been able to read Tolkien's Requiem years ago. Tolkien's Overture explores Ainur Lendile, the music of the Ainur, which is the Middle-earth creation story. In Tolkien's Overture, I conduct a close reading of the text as found in the Silmarillion and proceed to unpack the incredible role that music plays in the legends and lives of Middle-earth. One reader called it an excellent book, a critical and thoughtful deep dive into Ainur Lendile. Both books have been recently re-recorded in order to meet professional audiobook standards. Not only are both books available in audiobook format via Audible, but in signed paperback and Kindle as well. To learn more about Tolkien's Requiem, visit tolkiensrequiem.com. To learn more about Tolkien's Overture, visit tolkiensoverture.com. Or just go to tolkienroad.com/books to see them both at once. Seriously, though, I'm really proud of both of these books, and I know that you, like so many others, will enjoy them. So do yourself a favor and check them out. tolkienroad.com/books. And now, back to the show.
All right, so yeah, number King 4 is Tar Elendil, so, and that name means friend of elves. Tar Elendil reigned from 590 to 740. Of most significance is the fact that his eldest is a daughter, Silmarion, and you may remember from the Tale of Years, there's that interesting little note about Silmarion in there, and there's some discrepancy as far as what date is supposed to be used for Silmarion, but it's not really, we're not going to get into that right now. With her, we see two new themes emerge. First, the question of what to do when a daughter is the eldest or sole heir of the Numenorean king. For now, the daughter is passed over in favor of the eldest son. So Silmarion, even though she's the oldest, is passed over in favor of her brother, who is younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second theme that emerges is the emergence of the lords of Andúniae from her line, right? So even though Silmarion is never, you know, she's obviously still an important figure because she's the daughter of the king, and her descendants kind of foster this group of the lords of Andúniae, right? And they become later on known as this kind of general party of the faithful, right? So there emerges eventually two parties. The faithful are the minority party, but they're very later on in history, they become very they're kind of the party of tradition. They're the party of holding to friendship with Aman. They're the party of holding to the traditions of the past, as opposed to those who kind of take a more pessimistic bent, right? Mm-hmm. And power hungry bent. All right. So, and they will also, these faithful ones, the lords of Andúniae, become the leaders of the Numenorean exiles at the end of the Second Age, mm-hmm. who establish Arnor and Gondor in Middle Earth. All right, after Tar Elendil, we have Tar Meneldor, who is the fifth ruler. Tar Meneldor is, that name means the servant of heaven. He reigns from 740 to 883, and is best remembered by us as the father of Aldarion, of the story of Aldarion and Arrendis, right, which we read maybe a couple of years ago at this point. Wow. So
yeah. He doesn't factor into that story a whole lot, though, does he, Meneldor?
He's not like the most major character, but he's
a part of it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, definitely a good part of it. I mean, there's conflict between him and his son Aldarion
that's right, because there's that clashing of his love for the sea versus his love of the land.
And, right, Meneldor is like he's actually kind of a little bit more bookish. He's kind of like he loves to kind of like just kind of like go to the tower, and if I recall correctly,
and like look at the stars and stuff. Yeah,
you know, you know, he's a servant of heaven, right? He's kind of beholden to the stars, right?
That's right. Yes. So,
okay. And then, of course, after Tarman Eldor comes Tar-Eldarion. His name means son of trees. 883 to 1075 is his reign. Again, these years are not their lifespans. It is just their reign at this point. In his youth, he led expeditions to Middle-earth, and it was during this time that the shadow of Sauron first began to stir. Eldarion also changed the law of succession so that the eldest daughter should succeed if the king had no sons. This causes conflict with his nephew, Soranto, previously the legal heir.
And he did that because he only had a daughter.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where the law changes, right? So we no longer have this law, you know, that affected Silmarion, where the daughter doesn't have a right to take the throne. Now the daughter has the choice, right? If the daughter is the eldest, the daughter has the choice of taking the throne or not. So
it's not like she has to, but she's given the option.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ankalime does take the throne. Her name means the most bright, and she reigns from 1075 to 1280. She was the first ruling queen of Numenor, and she remained unwed for a long time and was pressed by her cousin Soranto to resign. Soranto, again, being the nephew of Tar-Eldarion, who was probably hoping to become the king after after Tar-Eldarion yielded the scepter.
Because he would have if Eldarion hadn't changed
the law. Right.
Yeah.
Instead, she marries Halakar, a fourth cousin, also a descendant of Vardimir. So fourth cousin means it's the great-great-great-grandfather that the relation goes back to, right? After her father's death, she cut off aid to Gil-galad, right? So one of the things that Eldarion is remembered for is fostering this relationship with the Noldor back in Middle-earth. And, you know, and so they foster a great, he fosters a great relationship with Gil-galad, but Anarion severs that, right? Mm-hmm. Neglects it, severs it. And, you know, not much more said about that, but we can maybe read that as being like, that's maybe how Sauron initially starts to get a foothold in Middle Earth and starts to, you know, gain a lot of power and a lot of traction. After Tar-Ankalime is Tar-Anarion. Tar-Anarion means child of the sun. And, Anarion reigned from 1280 to 1394. He's the son of Halakar and Ankalime, and not much is said of him. We don't have much here to go on as far as Anarion goes.
I think it's interesting to note that after Elros, like, no one ever reigned nearly as long as he did. The reigns, like, became significantly shorter.
Yes, but most of them... that's a great point. Most of them, though, are still over 100 years, right? So I'm looking
This. But I mean, Elros was 410 years. And it seems like the longest is still not quite two.
So we got Amandil, roughly 150 years. Mm-hmm. Elendil, 150 years. Meneldor, roughly 150 years. Eldarion, like 170 years. Mm-hmm. Ankalime, actually over 200 years. Anarion was one of the shortest so far. 114 year was the shortest so far. So, they all do average for a while over 100 years reigning, right? So that's important to keep in mind, because we're also going to see that change.
Yeah.
All right, and then after Tar-Anarion, who we don't know much about, came Tar-Surion. Name means son of the wind. Surion means son of the wind. Reigned from 1394 to 1556. Had two older sisters, but they both refused the scepter, right? So we said they could have taken, either one of them could have taken it instead of him, but they chose not to, and he became Tar-Surion. After Tar-Surion is Tar-Telperion. That name, Telperion, means Lady of Silver. Reigned from 1556 to 1731.
So a queen.
Right, second ruling queen of Numenor. She did not wed, and so the scepter passed to Minas Tirith, her nephew and a grandson of Tar-Surion. Mm-hmm. Right, so... little break in the line there, right? So Telperion has no descendant, so it passes over. The scepter passes over to her nephew, who is a grandson. So it's descended from Tar-Surion. So it's still, you know, still in the line of Elros there, right?
So she had brothers, right?
Yes.
Or is it sister?
It's not clear to me.
Okay,
but it might be written somewhere else. It's just not clear to me here.
Okay. So it's not like she was an only child, but no. She was the oldest of the children. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
If we cross-reference with the Tale of Years, it is during her reign that the Rings of Power are forged, including the One Ring. One significant textual problem, and Christopher notes this, is that according to the Tale of Years in the year 1700 of the Second Age, which would be during her reign, according to this table, Tar Minister sends a great navy to Lindon to do battle with Sauron. And Christopher just says, I can in no way account for this discrepancy. Right, that's basically his take on it, right? So if you look at the Tale of Years, it's during 1700, which would, according to this, would be Telperion's reign. Tar Minister sends a great navy in the year 1700 to do battle with Sauron.
And Tar Minister doesn't come along until after.
Until 1731.
Okay.
Right. So a little bit of a discrepancy there. Christopher says, I don't know what to make of this. My thought is maybe Tar Minister was like already kind of an important person, and it's his name is listed there, even though he isn't actually the king yet. But he's maybe like, maybe he was the one that like led, you know, or maybe at this point it was getting starting to overlap. Because I mean, Tar Telperion had been the queen for, you know, close to, by this point, by 1700, she would have been the queen for over 140 years. And so maybe at that point she's starting to think like, maybe I need to start turning over some responsibilities to Minister or something like that. Of course, it could just be a complete oversight on Tolkien's part, but,
or maybe he was just like her secretary of state or something.
Right. Or like secretary of defense.
Defense. That's
right. Or maybe like prime minister and it's just like, hey, you know, you rule the country. And there's possible that maybe especially in the older days, right. That as the kings and queens approached, you know, were in their reign for a long time and they were maybe starting to feel the first notes of weariness in their lives. They were like, okay, maybe it's time to start training up the next person, right? And, you know, training them up to be the ones making the decisions, even though they're not officially that person yet.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense to me.
That makes sense to me. It's, but for Christopher, just can't account for the discrepancy. So.
Oh.
Bummer.
Hopefully didn't lose too much sleep over it. I'm sure there's a very logical explanation.
It's just funny to me because, like, you know, you kind of feel like you get to know Christopher just like you get to know J.R.R. like through his works. Mm-hmm. Like you get to know Christopher a little bit, like through his commentary, like when he, because some, you know, sometimes he's very academic about everything, but sometimes he just is like, I don't know. and to me, but he's, you know, but he's got that same like very like English, like, you know, Oxford English gentleman kind of bearing about him. And I just love hearing him say, I can in no way account for this discrepancy.
Right. Instead of just being like, well, I don't know.
I just see him like shaking his head at his dad. Like, my dad was a mess. His notes were a mess.
It's like, this is going to look so terrible.
I tried. All right. So moving on. Next is Tar Minister, who is the 11th ruler. Minister means tower watcher, ruled from 1731 to 1869, loved the Eldar, but envied them, right? So still the friendship, still the love for the Eldar, but this is the first kind of negative sour note in that relationship that I've detected, right? He envies the Valar. I'm sorry, envies the Eldar. I mean, and so from here, we're going to kind of see things start to take that negative turn, which is really interesting because, you know, it's kind of like the introduction of that little negative sort of note, it may not seem like too big a deal, but it's the thing that kind of begins the process of you know, the relationship going really sour, going really negative.
Doesn't take much.
True.
Little foothold.
Ruler 12 is Tar Kiryatan, which means shipbuilder. Ruled from 1869 to 2029. So we're still, you know, Greta, we're still above the 100 year threshold for reigns.
Yeah, we are.
Mighty, but greedy of wealth. His men oppress the men of Middle Earth. So we have envy of the Eldar before, and now we have oppression, right? So this is very important because they've been coming to Middle Earth for a while and they had good relationships with the people.
That missionary spirit.
Missionary spirit, right? Trying to help the people, trying to establish mutually beneficial relationships, and now they're oppressing the men of Middle Earth. He forced his father to yield the scepter before he willed it. Boom.
Ooh.
Also a very bad thing, right? So before, before it was, I voluntarily yield this to you, my son, right? Now it's, father, I force you, right? You know, you must yield this scepter to me, right? And we don't know exactly how he pulled that off, but that's obviously a very negative note, right? There's none of this like graceful, peaceful transition anymore. There's tension, there's conflict about it.
Mm-hmm.
In this way it is held, this is in the text, in this way it is held, might the first coming of the shadow upon the bliss of Numenor be seen, right? Mm-hmm. So we got the envy with Tar Minister, and maybe he taught some of that envy, right? Maybe some of that envy, that little seed of envy, he detected that in his father, you know, meaning Kiryatan detected that in his father Minister, and that started to make him think, you know, in a pessimistic way, right? Mm-hmm. Think not as like, you know, we have these long lives to live, they're a blessing from Iluvatar, we have friendship with Aman, but that, man, maybe all these things are like limited and they're not going to be around forever, and I have to kind of, you know, seize the day while I can, right? You know, grab the gusto, right? So we see the entry. I'm going to kind of summarize this with Tar Kiryatan. We see three problems enter here. One, greed leading to the oppression of weaker mm-hmm. peoples, right? So no longer that missionary spirit, but greedy spirit using them. You know, we can kind of think of it. We might think of it as like this is a really interesting note from like a kind of a colonialism study perspective, right? So, you know, which is kind of a big topic these days of like going to other places and instead of establishing like friendship and mutually beneficial relationships with those people, like taking advantage of their ignorance, taking advantage of their weakness and using it to milk their lands, milk their resources mm-hmm. and, you know, and oppress them, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second theme, the second problem is scorn towards the West, right? So we have a little bit of envy towards Aman and with Minister, but we also with Kiryatan, maybe not caring as much about what they think, right? And then third, vying for ruling power in an illicit way, right? Mm. So wanting power for its own sake, it would seem. Right.
And we see that in him forcing his father right. to hand over the scepter before he was willing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I wrote that Tar Kiryatan may be the first evil king of Numenor.
Hmm. Evil.
Yeah.
In quotes.
I mean, that's my, that, you know, my term, but
he
seems like a pretty evil dude, especially yeah. compared to the notes we have about people that came before
yes,
him.
Yes, I would agree. He's definitely taking a turn downwards.
Yeah. Not that they yeah. were all perfect or anything like that, but he's doing, I mean, just that note of oppressing these weaker mm-hmm. peoples is really mm-hmm. awful,
it
right?
is. Agreed.
So,
yep.
Ruler 13 is Tar Atanamir. Jewel of Men is what that name means. Ruled from 2029 to 2221, almost 200 years. In his time, the shadow fell upon Numenor, right? So we have it. Boom. Shadow falls. He speaks openly against the ban of the Valar. He was the first king who refused to lay down scepter or life. And so there you have it, right? No longer, it's no longer like this customary thing to like lay down the scepter, right, and pass it on before one's death. Maybe be a little bit of that like king emeritus, right, and like, you know, you be a mentor while you're still around and like, you know, providing advice and that kind of thing. Now it's like I'm clinging to power and clinging to life, mm-hmm. right? So let's go back to that thing about, mm-hmm. You know, early on, right, these people of Numenor, right, and especially the line of Elros, they lived a full, robust, energetic life until the end. Like, and in the last few years, they would sense the weariness coming on, and that might be the point they officially hand over the scepter to their heir. And they live out their last few years in peace until they, you know, it's just kind of a blissful death at that point, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's like, you know, at peace, quick decline, mm-hmm. and you lay down your life voluntarily. Right.
Right.
Which is such a foreign concept to us, right? It's human beings. Like very few of us can probably think about like laying down our lives voluntarily. I mean, one of the things we'll often pray for when we pray the rosary, we'll pray when we pray the mystery of the Assumption in the rosary. And basically the Assumption is the teaching that Mary was assumed body and soul into heaven, right? That she kind of fell asleep and she didn't die in the same way that we all die. She fell asleep and was assumed into heaven by Christ, right? We pray that, and one of the things we pray for is the grace of a happy death, right? So mm-hmm. a happy, you can think of that as blessed, peaceful death, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not this death where we're like clinging on and we're afraid and everything, but we're just, it's kind of like falling mm-hmm. asleep in trust,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the death that the line of Elros was dying before, mm-hmm. right? It would seem. And now they're clinging to power mm-hmm. and they're clinging to life.
Yeah.
Clinging to power and clinging to life.
I thought this was, excuse me, an interesting note. Just going back to Vardimir,
mm-hmm.
it says does it mention that the kings died of free will mm-hmm. while yet in vigor of mind?
Yes.
And excuse me, when I first read that, I was thinking, wow, like that takes some like detachment there. Because mm-hmm. Who would want to die whilst, I mean, but that's a good way when you're still in vigor of mind. Like who, you know, like you still have something to give. So in a way, like as the world sees it, it's like, why would you want to go? Like you still, you know, are vigorous and with it. Mm-hmm. So you still have something to contribute.
Yeah.
But there's also just that detachment, like, oh, my time has come and, you know, it's time for someone else to pick up the throne.
I think that's exactly it, right? I mean, it's, you know, again, to use words that are probably familiar to many, right? Thy will be done, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of like, it's really not my life in the end, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, in the final analysis, though, though I'm a steward of my life, it's not my life mm-hmm. in the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
The breath I breathe is not ultimately my breath to take, right? And so it's this question of like detachment and surrender versus mm-hmm. stubbornness versus refusal versus fear, you know, all these you have these optimistic trusting sorts of tones before, and now you have these pessimistic mm-hmm. notes, right?
And I feel like it also you know, handing on the scepter while still of you know, free will and yet vigor of mind, especially to a descendant, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge, like, I feel like that would be just a huge blessing. It's the whole standing on the shoulders idea, right? Like being like, okay, my work here is done. I trust that I have raised up this, you know, this follower or this descendant of mine to pick up where I left off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of freedom, I think, and blessing in that.
Yeah, well, and you know, I even like the idea of that, like they were around for a few years to help.
Yeah.
Be kind of the like a mentor,
yes.
right?
Yes.
To them, even as they were in their first years of rulership,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine that if I were ruling some great kingdom, it would be really nice to have somebody there mm-hmm. to just go to and say, like, what do you think about
right.
this?
Right. right.
Well, yeah. What would be the best totally way to approach agree. This?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a beauty in that, right? There's
it
a
really
beauty
is.
Of like passing it on from one generation to the next of like, you know, it's like still having kind of a guardrail there for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you're trying to get the handle, right? You know, you got the training wheels on still a little bit, right? Until you really feel like you know what you're doing, because so much of life, the responsibilities that we have when we first take them on, there's a confidence factor, right? A self-confidence factor that mm-hmm. goes into them. Some people are just wired to have that right out of the gate. Most people are not, right?
Yeah.
Most people
mm-hmm.
are not. And so mm-hmm. you want somebody there to be able to go to and be like, what do I do
mm-hmm.
about this?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, did you ever experience anything like this in your life? Mm-hmm. And when you don't have that, it's a little scarier. Right?
Yeah.
And you might be more prone to making some ugly
mm-hmm.
mistakes in
Absolutely.
The early on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, So we have Tar Atanamir really, you know, carrying mm-hmm. on the shadow falls upon Numenor, and we see the evil ways of Kiryatan, his father, start to bear more fruit, right? Evil fruit.
Evil fruit, yes.
Yeah. Ruler 14 is Tar Ankaliman. Tar Ankaliman means most bright. Ruled from 2221 to 2386. A rift grows between the king's men, which is the greater party. So this is mm-hmm. the party of the rulers,
mm-hmm.
right? And the faithful, right? Remember that, lords of Andunie, right? So this is the faithful. Many of the king's mm-hmm. men forsake the use of the elven tongue. So they start forsaking the use of Quenya. Remember that first theme we talked about, right? They start to forsake it, though it's not like banned or anything yet. It's just kind of like, you know, we're not really using it anymore because, that's, you know, that's useless to us, right? What use do we have mm-hmm. of Quenya, really? It's just an old tradition. You know, it's interesting. And of course, there's a lot we could kind of dig into that and speculate mm-hmm. on why this is important to Tolkien. But we know that just... you know, as a philologist, this kind of stuff mattered to him, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was the high tongue. You might even say it unified them with the people of Aman, and it was almost like a way of like always remembering their kinship with Aman, right? Their friendship
mm-hmm.
with Aman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So that was Tar Ankaliman. Tar Telamalte is the 15th ruler. The name means silver-handed. Ruled from 2386 to 2526. ruling from death to death, but not fully, and their days begin to wane under the shadow, right? Mm-hmm. So they're ruling from death to death now. There's none of this overlap, right? It's hanging on to power, mm-hmm. hanging on to life, and now their lives are getting shorter, mm-hmm. right? Lives mm-hmm. are getting shorter because they're no longer surrendering them. They're worried. They're scared around every corner. The death might strike, mm-hmm. and their lives are getting shorter,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And it's an interesting note, just on a natural, I think there's meant to be sort of a supernatural level to that, but because obviously the long life was a gift, right? But there's also this note of like when we're just constantly in anxiety, mm-hmm. fear, you know, pessimistic, negative, mm-hmm. Stressed, that all can take a toll on our health and on our lifespan.
Health. Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. I think there's both a natural way of looking at mm-hmm. that and a supernatural way of looking at mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. or maybe a spiritual way of looking at that. It would be a better term. All right. So number 16, ruler 16 is Tar Vanamelde, which means beautiful, beloved. And this was the third ruling queen. She ruled from 2526 to 2637. So just a little bit over 100 years, 111 years. Ruled in name only. Her husband, Heru Kalmo, wielded her power. Upon her death, he took the name Tar Andukal and continued to rule until 2657, 20 years later, withholding the scepter from his son, whose it was rightfully. So Heru Kalmo was like, you know, how Prince Philip is not actually like in the line of succession, right? Even though did Prince Philip pass away? Yes, he did. Didn't he? He did.
Yeah, he did.
I forgot about that. That was like within the last year.
I was gonna say it wasn't too long ago. Yeah.
So when Prince Philip was alive, he was not in the line of succession, right? Because he was not he married the queen from outside mm-hmm. the royal family, right? Mm-hmm. So the next in line for succession was Prince Charles.
No, you're right.
Prince Charles. Not Prince Andrew. That guy's never gonna be king. He's a bad boy.
Yeah.
But Prince Charles is the next in line of succession, even though Prince Philip was there. So it's kind of like if Queen Elizabeth II, was like, I'm not going to be the ruler. I'm just going to kind of like, I think it says that Vanamelde was like kind of into song and dance. Like she like loved music and everything. So that was what she spent all of her time doing.
Yes.
So think of like Queen Elizabeth, if she was just like just concerned with her entertainment and she was like cool with Prince Philip ruling everything. Then Prince Philip is like, well, I'm going to make myself when Queen Elizabeth dies, I'm going to make myself King Philip, and I'm mm-hmm. not going to let, Prince Charles, my son, take over. Right. Mm-hmm. That would be kind of like what this is like.
Yeah.
So Tar Andukal, he is listed here. He rules for 20 years after mm-hmm. the death of Vanamelde. And withholds the scepter from his son. So again, we have mm-hmm. just these increasing power struggles, right?
Mm-hmm.
People trying to get their, you know, they want their share of the power, even when it's not rightfully theirs. And it's shortening the span of those like that. This is your son, right? It's like, mm-hmm. he's the rightful king. Why would you not want him to be king, right?
Right.
You could be his mentor, right? But you're choosing not to do that. Mm-hmm. So you have like the vanity of Vanamelde. Right, that's interesting. I didn't even think of that. But Vanamelde,
vanity.
Like, I don't know if Tolkien intended that or not. But you know, she's kind of a vain ruler. Like she can just kind of spend her time however she wants. So she chooses, even though she's the queen, she gets the title.
Mm-hmm.
She chooses not to do that, right? So as a woman, she could have not taken the job if she didn't want it.
Right, but she took it. She took it, but kind of neglected it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so her husband takes the power, wields it, and then refuses to pass it on
mm-hmm.
to the rightful heir, which is his own son. So you just see all mm-hmm. these like intrigues and powers, and it's just, man, it's just going bad. It's just going sour. It's just starting to rot and corrupt, right?
Yeah, not to get too Catholicly or religious, but it makes me think of that verse from the Bible. I think it's in one of the Paul's, I don't know. I'm not going to, but anyway, basically it says those who seek to save their life will lose it, or keep their life will lose it, and those who seek to lose it will keep it. So it's kind of like that whole idea, right? Like
I'm pretty sure Jesus said that.
Oops.
Yeah.
See, that's why I should have just said it and not attributed it to anybody. You're right.
Paul probably repeated it at some point.
He probably did, because that's kind of what Paul did. Yeah, but it's that same idea, right? Like it speaks to that detachment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the more detached we are to this world, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so Tar al-Kharan, who is the son of Vanamelde and Andúkal does eventually ascend to the throne after the death of his father. He is the 17th ruler. His name means glorious one. Al-Qarin means glorious one. 2657 to 2737. First ruler of Numenor to rule for less than 100 years, right? So we see the ruling. So not only are the lifespans getting shorter,
but the reigns
are getting shorter as well.
That's literally like a third of the amount of time that Elros reigned for.
No, that's like a fifth, right? Elros reigned for 400 years.
I thought that was 80 years.
So 80 years and 400 years would be a fifth, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's correct.
I'm the math person.
That's why I got you in my life. Keep my numbers straight.
Yeah. Our daughter is studying for the ACT right now, and last night she spontaneously, she's sitting there studying for the ACT, and she's like, "Hey, Dad, see if you can get this one." And she reads off this complicated word problem to me, and she's just like, "Go," and I'm like, "Wait, can I see the problem? I need to see the problem. I can't really listen to it." And she's just like, "What do you mean? Can you see? You can't just do that in your head. What's wrong with you?" So I eventually got it in my head though. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, you had to read it for yourself.
I do. And she was reading fast and everything. I'm in some completely different mode, and she just throws a math problem at me.
Yeah. Ugh. See, that was my problem. That's why I got that one wrong. Definitely. You just threw it at me out of nowhere. I didn't have time to make my complicated calculations.
She's definitely getting passed over for the mantle of rulership.
Wait, me?
No, she is.
Oh. Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, well. Probably wouldn't want it anyway.
Not that that even is a thing.
Okay.
I'm just saying, then I would be like, "Don't ever ask me a math problem like that again." I don't even know what we're talking about.
I don't either, actually. My fault.
I'm just trying to be silly and you're not following my
I guess I got confused. I'm still trying to do that math problem in my head. Yeah. So 80 into 400. Yeah, that would be a fifth.
The answer was 42. Let's just leave it at that.
You know what? That's the answer to everything.
Boom.
Yep.
As Douglas Adams told us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, moving on. We were at Tar Al-Qarin, glorious one. He rules for only 80 years, even though he should have ruled for 100 years. Following Tar Al-Qarin is Tar Calmasil.
Wait, why should he have reigned for 100?
We just went over this. He should have reigned for 100. His father took 20 years of his reign. Right?
Oh, yeah. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I can do that math. I just didn't know where that extra 20 came from. Now I got it. Okay.
Boom.
Got it.
All right. Ruler 18 is Tar Calmasil, and that name means bright sword. Ruled from 2737 to 2825, also less than 100 years. He won wide lands along the coasts of Middle-earth and rekindled the hatred of Sauron. In his time, the name of the kings was first spoken in Andunaic. He became Ar-Belzagar, right? Mm. So that instead of Tar Calmasil, it's Ar-Belzagar. So they start speaking it in their own tongue, right? So they're further distancing themselves from the use of Quenya.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ruler 19 is Tar Ardamin. That name means pillar of the world. Ruled from 2825 until 2899. Increasingly shorter time spans of ruling, right? So this is the third king in a row of less than 100 years. Ruler 20 is Ar Adunakor, which that name means Lord of the West. And so that's very significant because the Lords of the West were thought of as the Valar and Aman, right? And then more specifically, Manwë. So this name is blasphemous. He's the first king to take a title in an Andunaic tongue as opposed to the Quenya tongue, right, as kind of his official title. Although they still wrote Tar Herunumin in the scrolls, right? So they still are keeping the Quenya names in the scrolls, but basically just because they're afraid that, it's kind of like a superstition for them at that point, right? Which is interesting to think about because it's a legit tradition, but it becomes superstition and under the shadow, right? It becomes like things that are legit traditions and packed with meaning become superstitions under the shadow. That's kind of an interesting little note
there. That is interesting. That's very interesting. And he reigned for less than 70 years.
Yeah.
So that's very short.
Shorter and shorter lifespans, shorter and shorter reigns. Ruler 21 is Ar Zimrathun, which in the Quenya name, the Quenya version was Tar Hostamir, and the name means jewel gatherer. Ruled from 2962 to 3033. 22 is Ar Sakalthur. Quenya name Tar Falasian means child of the shore. Ruled from 3033 until 3102. And then ruler 23 was Ar-Gimilzur. Quenya named Tar-Telemnar. That name means star flame. Ruled from 3102 to 3177. Enemy of the faithful, right? So that the faithful party, the party of tradition, those people who gathered around the descendants of Silmarion, banned the Eldar from the land, refused to go to the Hallow of Eru, right? So the first king who just completely abandons the faith of Numenor, the religion.
So they were
of
still going at some, I mean,
yes,
they were still, that was still part, but it was more maybe of a suspicion, like a, oh, like a done out of fear rather than reverence.
Or superstition, or just like a tradition for tradition's sake, mm-hmm. rather than tradition for the meaning and, and true faith and belief, right?
Right, they kind of lost the meaning behind it.
Right.
Yeah.
Married Lindorie of the House of the Lords of Andúnië, who was secretly of the faithful. They had two sons. The elder, Enziladun, becomes Tar-Palantir and was of the mind of his mother. The younger, Gimilcad, was of his father's mind. So you have Tar-Palantir, the two sons, Enziladun, who's like his mother, who's one of the faithful, right, who's taught those ways. And then you have Gimilcad, who is of his father's mind.
Household divided.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tar-Palantir is the older. He becomes king in 3177. His name means far-sighted. He repents of all the ways of the kings, the last several generations of kings before him, turns back to the old ways. He gives the faithful some peace, but is resisted greatly by his brother Gimilcad. When he dies, he leaves only a daughter, Miriel, who, though the rightful heir, is forced to marry Farazun, the son of Gilmilcad, which even more so is an unlawful marriage due to relations. So the conflict continues between Tar-Palantir and his younger brother Gimilcad, and it's a conflict not just of the who should be king, but of and of power, but of like, you know, are we of the party of the king, or are we of the party of the faithful, right? Are we going to follow the ways of the faithful, of the traditions, or are we going to continue to depart from those ways? And then even though he has a daughter, Miriel, who is the rightful queen, the rightful next in line, Gimilcad's son, Farazun, seizes her and then seizes the throne. So really bad dude, right? Farazun, so, I mean, they're first cousins, right? So that's, pretty messed up. And then, so ruler 25 is Ar Farazun, right? And Tar-Kalion. I should go back and say it's messed up because they're first cousins, but also, and maybe even more importantly, it's messed up because he basically like forces her to marry him, right?
I'm trying to figure out how that works. Like, I mean, this is probably a tangent we don't need to go down, but like, how can you like be forced to marry someone? Like, why can't you just run away?
Who knows,
like,
right?
No, I'm not doing that.
Well, it's easier to do something like that if you're not a powerful person who has all this, but who knows? Like that's we don't know why, like how that happened, but I don't think it's a stretch to say things like that have happened throughout history.
No,
right?
Yeah, no, I think that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I could get into what immediately comes to mind is frankly some very ugly sort of speculation, but things I wouldn't put past our Farazun.
It's more about the principle, really.
And it's the way that I think that people who are like good natured, people who try to live a good life, can be easily victimized by those who are not.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
It's kind of like the, serpents and doves, right? So it's like gentle as a dove, but you got to be wise as a serpent at the same time, or the serpents are going to take advantage. They're going to take advantage of you, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So anyway, it's a fascinating question, and honestly, probably something they'll explore in the Amazon show.
Yes. Yeah.
As far as how that all went down, but there's many different ways it could go down.
Yeah.
Right. The point is like, it probably wasn't, he obviously wasn't holding a gun to her head, right? But it was like, he manipulated some situation.
Mm-hmm.
We watched House of Cards for several years. We know how those manipulations, even in our modern day, can happen with people, right? Like how somebody corners you, right? Corners you, and you're just like,
you're kind of left without any other choice.
Gotta cooperate.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's interesting too to note here how it's gotten, like, how the means of seizing power have become more and more evil, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, it started basically with a dad refusing to hand the scepter to a son,
right?
Which is wrong, but in the grand scheme, it's kind of like, well, you can justify it this way and that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we've come all the way down to, like, forcing an unlawful marriage. Well, marriage is unlawful for many reasons,
mm-hmm.
just to get power, right? I mean, it's just a continuous decline into, you know, darkness and evil and taking more and more, like, taking further steps to seize a power that is not rightfully yours.
Yeah, and it's actually that it was Tar Kiryatan who forced his father to yield the scepter before he forced his father, right? So it wasn't the son holding
it. Oh, it wasn't the withholding.
It.
Okay.
It was the son forcing the father to yield it before he willed it, right?
Okay, seizing it before. It was
eventually
his.
We do have, like, you know, withholding the scepter, right? Mm-hmm. And
I see, but the first step was the... Right. But I guess just... I'm just trying to make the point of that is just this, like, people keep taking... Like, they keep going to greater and greater lengths mm-hmm. to seize power that's not rightfully theirs.
Yeah.
Like, it's just you see that slippery slope.
Legit.
Yeah.
Legit point.
Thanks. Yep.
Yeah, so last of all, we have Ar-Pharazôn, who, of course, we've been talking about, mm-hmm. Forces the rightful ruler, Meriel, to marry him. And Ar-Pharazôn, his Quenya name is written down as Tar-Kalyan, which means golden son of light. And, I'm sorry, Pharazôn means golden, and then Kalyan means son of light. Reigns from 3255 to 3319, and he is the last ruler of Numenor, whose actions lead finally to its destruction, which we know mm-hmm. about that from Akalabeth and other sources as well.
And I think it's interesting to note, too, that under Tar Palantir, it says that the White Tree was again given tendons and honor,
mm-hmm.
and that Palantir actually had prophesied, saying that when the tree died, then the line of the kings would perish. So I'm assuming that it was under the reign of Ar-Pharazôn mm-hmm. that the tree died. Is
yeah.
that correct?
Yep.
Because that's when the line perished.
Well, remember, it's Ar-Pharazôn who he orders the tree destroyed, right?
That's right. He orders it destroyed. The tree burned. Yeah. Right. So it's essentially
right. So there's
killed.
That whole story yeah. about Isildur.
That's right.
Rescuing, sneaking out, getting
you
know
yeah.
part of the tree
yes.
so that he can, and then they take it to Middle Earth, and
right.
and that's
replanted,
where the
yeah.
trees of Gondor come from.
Right.
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 So what last really interesting note here is that this work, along with Akalabeth, is attributed to Elendil, right?
Mm.
So we know that Tolkien likes to do this thing where the works are actual works within Middle Earth that mm-hmm. we just like happen to, you know, come upon. And so he attributes this and Akalabeth to Elendil. And what's interesting is that Akalabeth is not attributed to Elendil within that text, right? But right here, we see that Tolkien intended for both of these works to be from Elendil, and apparently it's also mentioned that Aldarion and Arrendis is also a story that Elendil we have because of Elendil.
Hmm.
So
you're saying Elendil is the one that put down this line of kings,
right?
According to Tolkien.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So key takeaways. Mm-hmm. So what was the purpose of Numenor? It was to be a blessing to some men, so that they might be a blessing to all. When that purpose is corrupted at the edges, the missionary purpose to other men transformed into conquest and oppression, it eventually reaches the heart of what made Numenor a land of peace and long life. So it's like an infection that starts at the edges, but then it gets into like your bloodstream, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's how that kind of thing works, right?
Sepsis, is
yeah.
that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's like a sickness that just gets inside of you and won't let go, right? Starts at the mm-hmm. edges, gets in, corrupts you from the inside.
Mm-hmm. It can be fatal.
Hanging on to life. So no longer laying down life and trust and as an acceptance of a natural end, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, there was kind of beautiful note that happened with Numenor where it was out from under the shadow, right? And they were no longer afraid of death,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That shadow of death.
There was a detachment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that they go from that to being afraid. Like the shadow mm-hmm. falls on them again and they're afraid, right?
Yeah. Trying to keep their life.
Power and intrigue, right? What starts as the orderly transition of ruling power willfully done in natural order eventually becomes something that rulers cling to and look with suspicion across generations and families.
Mm-hmm.
So in all, Numenor is a great land of great people with a great purpose, but when they lost perspective, they lost their heart and eventually their land and peace.
Hmm.
So
this was a really good discussion and primer mm-hmm. for the show. Because, I mean, this is like...
Yeah.
I think it's going to give us a good framework from which to reference, you know, different key events and rulers and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they, I hope they've, you know, got this, they're able to use this table and, you know, make reference to it. There's a lot of fascinating, I think it just, again, it just, there's some really important themes that I think emerge here and are, you know, clear for fans.
Oh, for sure.
Well, clear for us to see that we're on Tolkien's mind as he composed this story, right, of Numenor. So the vast history of Numenor.
Yeah.
All right, let's have a little correspondence.
Oh, yes, let's.
All right, so first off, we're going to hit a note from Werty, our patron, Werty. This is from September 28th.
Oh, going back in time a little bit. A little bit.
All right, this is funny to me because Werty sends us a lot of notes and a lot of correspondence, which we love. And it begins this by saying short note, and then it ends up being a pretty long note. Short note, during the Battle of the Five Armies... I'm winking at you, Werty, all right? Short note, during the Battle of the Five Armies, no comment on who the Five Armies were.
Ah.
Gandalf is described as sitting on Ravenhill with the elves in deep thought, as though preparing some last blast of magic before the end. I gave this some thought, and while looking at The Hobbit through a Bilbo's point of view lens, this statement could simply be what Bilbo thought Gandalf was doing during the duration of battle that Bilbo retained consciousness. But what was Gandalf actually doing? We must remember that Gandalf is a Maia associated with Manwë, who, A, is the most in harmony with the will of Iluvatar and the most capable of reflecting on the Ainu Lindale as a whole, instead of just the Song of Yavanna or Ale, as they would be able to see, at least based on my readings of the Silmarillion, and B, the Valar served directly by the Eagles, so this could mean a couple of things. He was A, looking into the future in a sense to determine the potential outcome of the battle. To what end, I'm not sure, because that gets into free will philosophy and other more legendarian-based complexities. Or B, Gandalf was all, yo, Manwë, need some help, bro. Maybe some Eagles, or like some strong wind? To which Manwë presumably assented to resulting in the Eagles turning the tide of the battle, because at this point they are no longer indebted to Gandalf, as told in the book, at least. The only reason they were so helpful to the Party of 15 was because Gandalf healed their leader of an arrow wound back when, and he says, so much for a short note. I think this is interesting, and I love your idea of it being Bilbo's point of view, right? That, you know, we're hearing Bilbo's point of view, but in reality, and he just thinks like, oh, Gandalf is like, you know, deep in thought, you know, just hanging with the elves deep in thought while this battle is going on. And maybe what Gandalf is actually doing, and Bilbo just doesn't understand it, is that he's like praying or like communing with Manwë, yeah, communicating with Iluvatar, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And asking for this, you know, greater assistance to come along. So yeah, that's a cool thought.
It is. Yeah. I think it's not impossible.
Certainly not.
At all.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of, you know, I like that. It makes me think about the, you know, the notion that Tolkien wanted to rewrite The Hobbit, which of course we explored, you know, a long while back, looking at the first three chapters that he kind of got through, and what would it have been like to see the story a little more fleshed out like that, right? And maybe understand a little bit more, you know, have some notes like Gandalf and Bilbo talking later on. Like Bilbo's like, Gandalf, what in the world were you doing just sitting up there? And Bilbo's like, well, actually, I was talking to Manwë.
Gandalf.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Gandalf, what were you doing up there, right?
Yeah.
I was talking
to
Manwë.
You must know.
Yes.
Yes.
Although I don't know if, I feel like Gandalf wouldn't have just come right out and told him that.
I don't think he would have. I don't think so. He may have alluded to it, but.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Werty.
Yes. Thank you.
Next up is James L., also a patron. October 11th. James says, hey guys, in episode 258, you received a message from Veronica that prompted a brief discussion about the word Adun and its meaning. It translates from Sindarin as dark pit, underworld, or hell. It may also be another name for Utumno and is definitely the name of a region in Mordor. So in the context of this was Bilbo, Gandalf calls the Balrog in Moria, he says, he calls it a flame of Adun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, so it's a basically flame of hell, right? You know, flame of the dark world, the underworld, and tells it to go back to where it came from. Thanks, James.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Next up is a YouTube comment from Metal Gear Solid Snake. And this is a question about Sauron. So some basic lore here. And going back to some of these questions sometimes. So Metal Gear Solid, and this is in response to episode 259 with Carl Hostetter. on the theological and metaphysical themes. Metal Gear Solid Snake says, was Sauron not an elf and he fell? Yeah, so Sauron was a Maiar, right? So he was a an immortal spirit, and who took on bodily form when he entered, at various times when he entered Arda, but the body was not a part of who he was, like, mm-hmm. by nature, right?
So he and Gandalf were like coworkers, basically.
Well, they were both Maia.
Maia,
yeah,
that's what I meant. I meant they were like of the same. What is that called?
Same species.
Yeah, species, race.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. Yes, they were both Maia. And yes, he did fall, right? So none of the creatures in Middle-earth created by Iluvatar are they're all created good, right? Even Melkor himself was created good, right? But falls, right? Melkor of his own will, and Sauron and many others were corrupted by Melkor, right? To do his will. So yeah. Good question.
Absolutely.
All right. And last off is from Alfred Vincent on YouTube. Alfred says, just love your discussions. Even though my beliefs, yours, and Tolkien's may all diverge at various points, his world brings us to a better understanding of our world. Mm-hmm. There is a genius and there's genius and there is transformative. Tolkien was the latter. I'm just into a few chapters of Nature of Middle-earth, loving it so far. I'm a new subscriber to your channel. Loving it so far.
Nice.
Thank you so much for subscribing, Alfred.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
I love that comment too. He says his world brings us to a better understanding of our world.
Absolutely.
That's so true.
Well, and I was going to say, I love the there's genius and there's transformative. So I think he still agreed that Tolkien is a genius, but I think he's taking that to another level and saying, like,
yes,
he's a transformative. And I think that's exactly it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Tolkien, he wasn't just a genius. Like what he did was beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. It was transformative. That's a great word. Mm-hmm. I could probably think of a million other words if you get me, because you'll get me gushing, but it was truly transformative. It transformed mm-hmm. literature. It transformed the later 20th century because of the influence of the work upon the world and upon people. I mean, it was humongous. Yep. Right? So
for sure. Yeah. It's not like he was a genius just for genius sake, right? Like he used it for a greater good.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Well, that's all for correspondence for this week. Of course, we've got plenty of others that, backlog, always trying to get caught up on that. And hopefully on our next episode, we'll be able to hit a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But continue to hit us up, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. All right. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: Andrew T.
John R.
Ms. Anonymous.
Red Hawk.
Caitlin of T with Tolkien.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric S.
Eric B.
Johanna T.
Mike M.
Robert H.
Paul D.
Julia.
And Werty.
As well as those celebrating their patron anniversary in October, Heathen Rohirrim.
And Adam.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks, guys.
And thanks to everybody for listening. We'll talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.